for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about the long-standing problem with using our oceans as both a garbage disposal and a pantry. There's another phrase for that, but it's not safe for radio. We've known about this for a long time, but we will share yet another reminder of why it's a good idea to stop eating fish. We'll wrap up with the vegan calendar of events.
And Jeannie? Also the animal rights quote of the week.
Ah, yes.
All right.
Take it away.
All right. A new study found that an alarming amount of ocean trash makes it into the bloodstream of those who eat sea animals. Researchers at the University of Ghent in Belgium found that those who eat fish are also consuming around 11,000 pieces of microplastic per capita annually.
Wow, is that sustainable plastic?
Yeah, or is it the biodegradable plastic? Yes, I don't know. The first comprehensive risk assessment of its kind, scientists determined that while certain animals have filter mechanisms to excrete ocean trash, like plastic, some plastic particles remain lodged in their bodies and were transferred to the humans who consume them.
Hmm.
We call that the food chain. The researchers have established that plastic enters our bodies and can stay there for quite a while. This suggests possible consequences of consuming ocean life tainted with plastic includes leaching chemicals into the body and creating inflammation in tissues.
So we might very well have people avoiding BPA-lined, BPA-treated plastic or other plastics they consider harmful.
Right, those like cans
right.
that are lined with that, yeah.
But then eating their wild-caught organic fish and reconsuming it.
Exactly. So, additionally, ocean life, as we know, is being decimated by other human activities, and the World Wildlife Fund recently predicted that if current practices continue, our oceans may be completely fish-free by 2048, and we'll talk more about that later. That's the last news piece that I have. So, in any way, I just want to point out that this is not new information. I mean, I guess the specific number of pieces of plastic, that's new, a new metric.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you don't know or you don't have a clue about this issue, maybe it's because you didn't want to know. You know, you just were putting your head in the sand. Or maybe the people who sell these products to you don't want you to know, right? It could be either of those scenarios. But once you learn about it, like we just shared with you, you really should take it seriously. I'm going to play a clip to you for you from a 2008 radio show that was called Living on Earth. It was an environmental radio show that came on weekly. This clip features Dr. Roger Payne, who is a renowned researcher and environmentalist, who is actually, small fact, who is best known for his discovery that humpback whales sing songs.
Ooh, do you guys want to hear my whale song? Maybe next time.
Okay, all right.
You didn't see the look of terror that just went across Jeannie's face.
No, it was more rampant curiosity. I'm like, do I let you loose to actually, you know, vocalize like a whale? So, yeah, Dr. Payne had started out as a graduate student recording bat songs, and then he had the idea to, you know, drop a hydrophone into the ocean and then start decoding those sounds were.
That must have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, there was when I was researching about them, they recorded a humpback whale song onto one of those flimsy plastic records
mm-hmm.
that they used to stick into magazines, and they stuck it into National Geographic. It was like distributed amazingly widely. So anyway, yeah, I just think it's amazing that once upon a time, within our lifetimes, we didn't know that whales had vocalizations and
right.
communicated something to each other. I think they're used as courtship calls as well as like, here I am, here
right,
I am.
Right.
So anyway, Dr. Payne is a very well-educated man. I think a lot of reason to believe everything he says. He was educated at Harvard and then did his PhD at Cornell. And in 1971, he founded the conservation group Ocean Alliance, which is now almost 50 years old. In 1979, Dr. Payne wrote a National Geographic article about his concerns that pollution would replace the harpoon as the next great threat to the whales, and ultimately to ourselves, to humanity. And to analyze this threat...
Yeah, I was just going to say, that just shows how long, you know, as a species, as a world, as countries, that we ignore these problems and push them down the road, similar to climate change and other forms of pollution, and they're very obviously, you know, deterministic problems that are identified 30, 40, 50 years ago, and people take 50 years to solve it, and it's you know.
Or we don't solve it.
Or we don't solve it,
these
right.
Issues are not solved. I mean, I've been been doing animal rights since the 80s, and issues that I've reported on this show repeatedly came up back then, like antibiotic resistance, threatening, you know, the loss of our antibiotics as we use it to fatten up animals as a feed additive to help animals gain weight.
Yeah.
So, anyway, onward. To analyze the threat that whales faced from pollution, he devised a method of taking samples of whale blubber and had it analyzed for chemicals. I'll post a link to the whole clip of the whole show that I'm taking the clip from, and he talks about the methods by which they obtained the whale blubber samples. It's kind of interesting, and he emphasized that it was useful.
Why do whales have blubber, but I have fat?
Yeah, really. I almost changed the language on this to say fat instead of blubber, but I kept it blubber. Anyway, he devised a method for pulling a small bit of blubber from these whales and then sending it off to a lab for analysis. So this clip is from a 2008 interview on the show Living on Earth about his continuing research, and I found that the effects on human health of this clip to be startling and scary.
What we can say is that these animals are polluted beyond your wildest dreams. They are appallingly polluted. The ocean is downhill of everything on Earth, and the result is that everything flows into the ocean from higher ground, and that means it's the ultimate cesspool, basically, of the world. Industry has always said the solution to pollution is dilution, and it's absolutely true. If you take some poison and drop it somehow into the ocean, or it eventually gets there in streams, it gets diluted down to such low concentrations that, in fact, it is harmless. But then a totally insidious thing happens, and that is it dissolves into the oil droplets that are part of the they are the base of the food chain. And so anything we produce that animals can't handle, they then can't get rid of. And the result is they have to store it, and they pass it up food chains. Many of the substances that we're concerned with are fantastically insoluble in water. They are highly soluble in fats. So what happens is that they end up in the ocean water anywhere in parts per trillion or parts per quadrillion, so hugely diluted. But as soon as they get into fats, they end up in very, very high concentrations because the fats can hold lots of them. The trouble is the animals don't have any way of dealing with them, so they store them, and then they get passed on when that animal gets eaten by some other animal. So here on your plate is a pound of swordfish. It took 1,000,000 pounds of diatoms to create that 1 pound, not the whole fish, just that 1 pound. 1,000,000 pounds is 500 tons. So it took 50 10-ton truckloads of diatoms to make that 1 pound of swordfish. So you take all those trucks and you park them along in a row. It's about 10 blocks long. And to the end of that row, you attach your liver. And with it, you detoxify that entire line of trucks. And that's what you do when you eat a pound of swordfish. And then maybe tomorrow you have another pound. I adore swordfish. I would do anything to have a piece of swordfish except eat it.
So that was a clip from Dr. Roger Payne, founder of the environmental group Ocean Alliance, a distinct non-vegan, talking about how he won't eat swordfish. I checked, and folks, you can still buy swordfish at the supermarket, but it still carries the same load of, 50 truckloads of toxins behind it now as it did back in 2008 and back in 1979 when he started his research.
Yeah, those are some big, scary numbers, and it doesn't necessarily matter if you're eating an ocean-farmed fish or not. It's all in that same ocean, right? It's all distributed.
Yeah, and, you know, swordfish, because it's a definitely a top-level apex predator, mm-hmm. it's going to be more subject to this concentration. But I would hazard a guess that any fish that's big enough for us to fish and eat it has eaten quite up the food chain, has
right.
eaten quite a few truckloads of these chemicals through the base level diatoms that accumulate these toxins.
Yeah, it's you know, at that scale, I don't know enough to speculate too much, but it's not just, you know, it's concentrating in the animals. Probably those animals, if they don't get caught and die and don't get eaten, it's now concentrating in the sediment. I think that his explanation there was a good inversion of how, you know, you go from dilution to then reconcentration.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and that is the way our surface water is managed,
right?
To dilute runoff before it's discharged into whatever the quote the receiving water is. So our wastewater treatment plants will treat to a certain level of concentration,
right.
which is legally allowed, and
right.
then they'll dump it into the river, and eventually everything finds its way into the ocean. And then the cycle begins again.
Wow.
So, yeah, I found that really striking back in 2008, and I like to share it because this guy he doesn't have a vegan agenda. You
right.
know, he's not even talking about animal rights. But still, the threat from these fish he takes very seriously. So, yeah, and I'll just say, you know, a lot of people are encouraged to eat fish. I was looking at recent nutritional guidelines that say women and children should be eating measured amounts of fish, mostly because, I would say solely because, they are good sources of omega-3 fatty acids. And I will just let our audience know that those fish are not metabolizing those omega-3 fatty acids from their own metabolism. They are ingesting them and concentrating them, just like they're concentrating these toxins at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want the benefits of omega-3s, and everybody should be getting their omega-3s, they're important for brain function and a whole bunch of other stuff, you can get it where the fish get it, which is from algae oils. And you can get those at our health food stores, and they are fish-free. So,
awesome. All right, on to the next story. Excuse me. Animal advocates are celebrating a major victory for captive whales and dolphins following an announcement that the Vancouver Park Board voted unanimously to ban displaying these animals and keeping them at the Vancouver Aquarium.
Hooray!
Yeah, and which, you know, Vancouver's pretty progressive anyway, so it's both good that this is happening, and I was slightly shocked that they hadn't done it yet. I hold them to higher standards. The Vancouver Aquarium has found itself at the center of debates surrounding cetacean captivity for decades. It's had an ongoing mistreatment of beluga whales and continued attempts to breed them, and their continued attempts to breed them in captivity landed them on In Defense of Animals' annual list of 10 worst tanks for dolphins and whales in North America. That's got to be a distressing read.
It
was also the subject of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which exposed how it deceives the public about its practices. This is a documentary in the same category as Blackfish. So following the recent deaths of mother and daughter belugas, Aurora and Kila,
yeah,
who died mysteriously within days of each other in November 2016, the issue spurred debate about whether the aquarium cetacean exhibit should actually just be shut down. They had recently announced they'd be closing their beluga exhibit by, 2029
or
so.
Yeah, we'll just do a long timeline on that.
You know, we got to think about it. But it would also be bringing back five non-breeding belugas who are currently on loan to the United States, in the United States, to SeaWorld and the Georgia Aquarium, which is another despicable practice of commodifying animals and shipping them around, especially ocean animals, which really just want to be in the ocean, not trucked around the United States. Fortunately, it looks like these belugas may never return. While the Vancouver Park Board was considering a measure that would have potentially brought this issue to the voters, the members instead took immediate action to bring cetacean captivity to the aquarium at an end. After two nights of public meetings, the Vancouver Park Board voted unanimously to ban the import and display of whales, dolphins, and porpoises in Vancouver.
Yay!
I mean, unlike our own Chico Council, who won't even hear people currently. The aquarium still has cetaceans whose fates have yet to be determined. A proposed bylaw may allow them to stay for the remainder of their lives or require their removal, but for now they're the last the aquarium will ever have. And that's often a sort of a red herring argument non-vegans use about, well, if you stop eating cows, what's going to happen to all the cows?
Yeah.
Or if you close down the slaughterhouse, where are the cows going to go? And it's a totally irrelevant argument. Sarah Kirby-Young, a commissioner who formerly worked as the aquarium spokeswoman, said it became clear after public meetings and receiving thousands of comments on cetacean captivity that the vote was the will of Vancouverites. She was quoted in the local newspaper saying, "Our job is to listen to the public. This is an issue where public sentiment has been changing, and progressively people have been feeling more and more uncomfortable. Would that all our governments listen to the public."
Really?
Hopefully people will keep the pressure on and continue to make people uncomfortable about captive whales and dolphins. As we've seen with this and blackfish and some of the SeaWorld stuff, public pressure works. All facilities should follow the lead of those that are closing their exhibits and ending the confinement of these highly intelligent and social animals who are imprisoned enough for nothing more than profit and our entertainment. So this is great stuff.
It was a little good news, you know.
Yeah.
We can load up this show with a lot of bad news. There's plenty of it, but it's nice to see activists making things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's next, Jeannie?
So, one more story to round out today's... Oh, if you're listening to Non-Human Radio with Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. One more story to round out today's focus on our oceans. In December of last year, the World Wildlife Fund issued a warning that if we continue business as usual in the fishing and on the consumer side, the oceans will be empty in the near future. The World Wildlife Fund warned that global fish populations may completely collapse by 2048. That's not very far away.
Yeah, no, that's not.
According to the organization, the demand for fish worldwide is 2 to 3 times higher than the oceans can support. There are just too many boats out there catching too many fish. The World Wildlife Fund explained that 53% of the world's fisheries are fully exploited, including most of the top 10 fisheries in the world, and an additional 32% of fisheries are heading towards depletion. The group says that the causes of overfishing include massive bycatch, and that's when non-target species are caught up in the nets or on the hooks.
Which is every time they fish.
Exactly, and that bycatch includes cetaceans. It includes sea turtles, it includes dolphins and porpoises and sharks and small animals, seals sometimes. Anyway, it's well worth thinking, considering when you eat that fish that there's 10 other fish that, you know, die for that as well. Irresponsible fisheries, destructive practices, which are like netting practices, dredge and trawl netting that scrape all life off the bottom of the ocean. Subsidies, government subsidies that keep too many boats in the water. And then you're just straight up pirate and scofflaw fishers who just don't pay attention to anything. For example, too, we have to take a look at newly fished species such as monkfish, Patagonian toothfish, blue ling, and orange ruffy. These fisheries have already collapsed in some areas. These species are, quote, newly fished because other more popular fish have been overfished and now are too scarce to be marketable. So they got nets, they're going to move on to the next species, and our restaurants and fish stores will sell them. Worse, there's insufficient data on other fish species. And so, like, we're fishing and we don't even have the data to determine what would be sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
We're just literally fishing in the dark.
Don't even know how many there are, so how many should they be taking?
Yeah. Yeah. So the impacts of declining fish catches are painful not only for the fish, of course, but also for many coastal fishing communities around the world. And Newfoundland in Canada, on the other side of Canada, the Atlantic side, is an excellent example. For centuries, the cod stocks of the Grand Banks and the Atlantic seemed inexhaustible. But in 1992, which is just 25 years ago, the cod fishery collapsed, and some 40,000 people lost their jobs practically overnight, including about 10,000 fishermen and their families. 25 years later, in modern times, contemporary times, the cod stocks still have not recovered, and scientists now also see signs that the ecosystem has substantially changed. And so we will probably never see that kind of abundance of cod and the subsequent food chains and ecosystems that are dependent on that type of robust population. So, and I think it's just pitiful that this article by the World Wildlife Fund concluded its warning, after all this dire information, that consumers really should only purchase sea animals labeled as sustainable, right? I mean, I just find that mind-boggling. That
the world, they're saying that the world fish populations might collapse by 2048, which would really mean that massive amount of loss of biomass would basically cripple the ocean, and we would all die. The whole right. global conveyor of the ocean would die. Everything would just stop. And so that's bad. But you know, get your sustainable fish, because I'm sure there's some magic in how that's caught, and you know, should we trust those guys?
What frustrates me is that that's the only option they have.
Right.
They don't say, or you could just refrain from eating fish, period.
Right.
Right. So anyway, I think that if you care about the ocean, you'd simply stop eating fish. If you care about fish, and there's plenty of reason to show that they are far more sentient and amazing than we give them credit for, you would never even consider eating them in the first place. So
I agree.
So anyway, and we'll have there's some events coming up that are related to that, so you can learn more about fish. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. We are talking about the oceans. And now?
Now it is time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get ready to mark your calendars.
Okay. All right. Saturday, March 18th, this Saturday, is the meet out at Animal Place. Join Animal Place for its great March meet out celebration and enjoy vegan hot dogs, vegan cheese, vegan cookies, beverages, and more. All their barns will be open, so you can meet and learn about their animals. This is from 11:30 to 3:30 at Animal Place in Grass Valley, California. You can register for the event at the Animal Place website at animalplace.org.
Plenty of time to get down there by 11:30. So
yeah, it's a nice laid back place. It's pretty small, and you can really get to meet some animals and meet the people who take care of the animals. It's a good thing to do. And then next Monday and Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. is Brave the Cage. Would you brave the cage? On March 20th and 21st, Chico for Animal Rights and Animal Place will be holding the Brave the Cage event at Chico State from 10 to 3. That campaign's mission is to educate the public about what life is like for 95% of hens raised for eggs. Participants are invited to brave the cage and experience confinement inside a human-sized battery cage. Check out the Chico for Animal Rights Facebook page or the Animal Place website at animalplace.org for more information. And you can also check out our archives of Non-Human Radio and go back to March 23rd, 2016 for our in-studio interview with last year's Brave the Cage coordinator, Stephanie Bain. Next Thursday, March 23rd at the Chico Grange Hall, the Plant-Based Chico Group will be meeting at 6 p.m. with special guest, local author and vegan educator, Lonnie Muhlrath, who is the author of the book, The Plant-Based Journey. For more info, join the Plant-Based Chico Facebook group, and you'll meet a really nice group of people. Then next Saturday, March 25th, is the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Chico Library on Sherman Avenue. We'll be meeting at 6:30, and we will be celebrating pie. That is pizza pie, apple pie, shepherd's pie, pot pie, and so on. If you're a healthy-minded vegan person, and you don't indulge in like really rich stuff, the Plant-Based Chico will have a special table for Whole Foods plant-based, also delicious goodies.
I'm going to be bringing some cornbread muffins with a little jalapeno with apple syrup on top. So they're also round and they fit the pie theme.
I see. I was going to ask how you're connecting to pie on that. Anyway, if folks want to get information on that and on other things going on in Chico, vegan-related, go to chicovegan.com. Then, coming in April, we have the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series Book Club, The Cares Group, is back. Mm-hmm. They'll be reading the best-selling book, What a Fish Knows, The Inner Lives of Our Underwater Cousins, by Jonathan Balcom. And the group will be mediated by Chico State philosophy professor Robert Jones. We'll be meeting for the first three Thursdays in April from 7 to 8:30 at the Center for Design Control, which is in the Garden Walk Mall, Suite 15.
Robert, super smart, and obviously this is his business, is talking about philosophy and intersecting with animal rights. So I encourage people, like-minded people, to come and have a chat.
Yeah, we'll be meeting three times and reading about two chapters of the book every time, and you don't have to have necessarily read everything in the book before you show up. And then I just want to give a heads up that Jonathan Balcom himself will be visiting Chico State to talk about fish sentience and his book, What a Fish Knows, on Monday, April 24th. So that's way out in the future. So mark your calendars for April 24th, 7 to 8:30 at Chico State. The room is to be determined. So that is April. And then another thing to mark your calendars now. I'm saying now because, you know, summer will be here. Our weekends will be filled up. And then you'll forget that, oh, yeah, Saturday, June 3rd is the Nevada City Vegan Food and Wine Festival from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in Nevada City at the Oddfellows Lodge. It's going to be a vegan celebration of food samples, cooking demos, vegan author readings and book signings, kids events, various pop-up food vendors, wine tastings, and more. One of the authors who's coming will be Jasmine Singer, who's the co-host of the Our Hen House podcast. Mm. And she's a pretty dynamic lady. So she'll be doing a reading, and she has a new book out, which I cannot remember the name of. And also on June 2nd through 4th, is the Farmed Animal Conference, again at Animal Place, which is just, they're being really active this year. That's good. If you miss hearing Carol J. Adams speak at the Conscious Eating Conference, which I went to and she was amazing, I recommend attending the Farmed Animal Conference, which will be June 2nd through 4th at Animal Place. And you can register for that at animalplace.org. Early bird registration will end on March 31st, so check that out. And that is all that I have for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, send an email to chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. And we have one last bit of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
The quote of the week is from the book What a Fish Knows by Jonathan Balcom. Quote, fishes are collectively the most exploited and overexploited category of vertebrate animals on Earth. The science of fish sentience and cognition has advanced to a point where it may be time for a paradigm shift in how we think about and treat fishes. Yes, fish have feelings too.
Yes, they do. And it's like one of those things, if you don't look for it, you can't find it.
I think that's one of the root causes of all human evil, is just that person or thing looks different from me, therefore they're not like me, and I don't understand them.
Yeah.
So it's okay to you know, be mean to them, which is just...
We have to understand our limitations, which is, or our predilections, which are for facial, we recognize emotions on faces, and fish don't have that, but they have other amazing sensory capabilities, and so I recommend that folks check out that book. So, anyway, Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners, and also I have also by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, yes, vegan, gluten-free offerings, plus craft beer and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also sponsored by the ARC stores in Chico, Oroville, and Paradise, putting your green philosophy towards a worthy cause. The ARC stores offer gently used clothing, furniture, and antiques, collectibles, and more. All proceeds support local people and families with developmental disabilities. Open 7 days a week at 2020 Park Avenue in Chico, 2745 Oro Dam Boulevard in Oroville, and in Paradise at 6640 Clark Road. More info at thearcstore.org. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand of The Real Issue and Bill Mash of Without a Roof for their enlightened engineering assistance and moral support. Wednesday from 5 to 7, you probably heard the Ford promote on that. That's one of the standout days of the week for local public affairs programming. Stay tuned for the for Sue Show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, please visit the archives at kzfr.org and search for Non-Human Radio. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Tom signing off.
Be different.